Monitor for Sunday afternoon, March 5. And the days gallop by until April 15th. The day of reckoning, the tax deadline. Millions of us know why it's called a deadline. Fact is, the average citizen is dead 118 days per year, so far as keeping the money he earns goes. 118 days pay goes to the Internal Revenue. A fellow who'll talk with us in a few minutes has written a book about the Internal Revenue Service, which isn't entirely flattering to the IRS. Want to hear something about that practice called the audit? We'll go into that. Meantime, for contrast, a song entitled Life is Groovy by the United States Double Quartet.
Song, and then I'll just be on my way, hey, on my way. I'll move along on to another place and day. On that day, I started out about 1,000 years ago. Oh, oh, I know. And sing and shout, I just might head for Mexico. And so, I cop a walk and I ride the rails, keep moving. So, I sleep in parks and I sleep in jails. Life is groovy. I walk and I ride the rails, keep moving so. I sleep in parks and I sleep in jail. Life is groovy.
Now a message meant for you.
Get with living the exciting way. Drink sparkling champagne like nothing else you ever tasted. Nothing else except champagne. So put more sparkle in your life today with sparkling champagne.
Tastes like champagne. Champagne. C-H-A-M-P-A-L-E. Buy sparkling champagne wherever beer is sold. Costs just pennies more. Sparkling Champagne Malt Liquor, Metropolis Brewery, Trenton, New Jersey. Ever get the feeling that you're working for the government without having taken a civil service exam? Think about it, taxpayers. Our forefathers renounced the tyranny of taxes in 1776. They felt that they were fit to tax themselves. And you've got to admit, we've been very good at it. The Internal Revenue Service is the biggest money-collecting industry on earth. It's a large subject to cover in one book, but an investigative reporter named Bill Surface has done it. The book's called Inside Internal Revenue, and the author talked with Betty Grobley in Washington.
Bill just told me that he's recently written an article on gamblers for Sports Illustrated, which I think I read, Bill. Why don't you share some of the information there with us right now?
I mentioned it, too, in the book. The Internal Revenue Service, of course, compels gamblers, illegal gamblers, that is, to buy a $50 tax stamp each year, plus report 10% of the earnings. This sort of puts the gamblers in a bind because it's not a license. It's a crime not to buy the stamp, not to pay the taxes. But if they buy the stamp, the local authorities, of course, know who they are, and they can come in and arrest them. So naturally, most gamblers don't buy the stamp. nor do they pay taxes, so the Internal Revenue Service is the leading investigative agency of trying to round up gamblers, and for not doing this, and they've gotten some big ones.
Do you assess how much the Internal Revenue Service is losing through people who gamble heavily?
I think the Justice Department said there's about $7 billion a year bet illegally on sports and numbers, rackets, and that type of thing.
$7 million?
Billion.
Billion?
That's what they estimate.
Good heavens.
It's of course, they haven't got the agents to, you know, to track down all this. They're primarily a tax-collecting organization, and they can't spend all their time on gambling because they don't get that much more
from it.
From it than they would from...
Bill Surface, carry one of our returns through, will you? Assuming that my engineer, Bob Slaughter, has filled out his income tax return and sent it in, what are the prospects that it might be audited? Now, is it all computerized?
Well, starting this year, everyone's individual turn will go through a computer. In other words, we go to a place like Philadelphia, which is a big building, it's about as big as 4 football fields. Women are sitting there transferring your return.
As big as 4 football,
fields. It's just staggering to see it. Just about 1,000 women sitting at key punch machines. They put your card, your return, all the information goes onto a little card, a key punch. They put the card in a machine, which transfers it to a tape. It looks like a tape recorder. They eventually bring it to Martinsburg, West Virginia. And they shove it through the machines, or the monster, they call it. And it checks your arithmetic. It checks to see if you've declared everything that's accredited to your Social Security number, all of your income. And then when they or if you're due a refund, do you have any back bills? Now, eventually, they get through. And if you have claimed a refund, they will audit you first, which is this year called a pre-refund audit. The reason for this is they feel it's easier to get the money from you while they still have your money rather than bill you later. The chances of audits are about 1 in 20. And the chances are much higher, of course, if you're in the upper income.
All right, assuming now that his has been picked out to be audited, what happens?
Generally, two types of audit for an individual. They either write you a letter and say, send in, we're questioning your medical deductions. Can you send in receipts and prove this?
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's a little bit more complicated than that, which it usually is, they will send you a letter, say, you report between hours of noon and 1 o'clock on a certain date at the revenue office and bring in your substantiation, I think they call it. Then you have to go in and face an auditor, and you have to, and be brief, you just have to prove what you have on your return. If you can prove it, it's fine. If you can't prove it, they generally knock it off. About 3 out of every 5 persons who go in for an audit have to pay additional money. In fact, the average on that
What's
is
the average, Bill?
About $750. $770.
Yeah, but how many out of how many? What did
three
you
out of, almost 3 out of 5.
Have to pay?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned somebody in the high income bracket. And you point out in your book that many millionaires pay absolutely no taxes. Will you explain how this is done?
Yes, there's 17, I think, of about 300 millionaires, genuine millionaires, who pay no taxes. There's nothing illegal. There's nothing wrong with the Internal Revenue Service. It's just as they have put their money in tax-free bonds. In other words, you can buy municipal bonds, state or local bonds, sold by a local government, and the income on that is not taxable. In other words, and these people have put their money in that. They make a little less than they would at a bank interest, or maybe a little less in the stock market, but they have to pay no interest and no taxes on it.
And it's perfectly legitimate.
Perfectly legitimate.
Why couldn't the rest of us do that, then?
Anyone could do it. There's really nothing sinister about it. It's just that these people, I guess if you become a millionaire, most of them look for the ways to save, and there's one of them.
Well, I wish we had more time. We do not. You can read about this. It is called Inside Internal Revenue, a report to the taxpayer, by a leading investigative reporter whose name is William Surface.
That's the difference between me and Betty. She wishes we had more time. I wish I had more money. Anyway, maybe we better get Secretary of the Interior Udall in on this. He's done a great job trying to preserve our natural resources. And it may just be that the American taxpayer will be the first natural resource to be exhausted. You are on the Monitor Beacon.
This is your NBC station. This is the pulse of the nation. For news and music, for topical news
into NBC. Topical views, of course. Monitor has them all weekend. The topic we're covering in some depth this afternoon is the problem of pollution, air and water pollution, as it exists in various countries of the world. Read the other day that water pollution kills more South Vietnamese than the Viet Cong. In this report from Saigon, George Page talks about air pollution in that city.
A year ago, an occasional discreet putt-putt from a motor scooter could be heard. Now, Saigon streets are swarming with motor scooters. It seemed to happen overnight. The government lifted its quota on the number of scooters which could be imported to South Vietnam, and suddenly everybody was buying them. In less than a year, 120,000 Japanese motor scooters have come into Saigon, and they are still arriving every day. The noise is perhaps the least objectionable feature of the scooters. Because of them, Saigon traffic is as bad as New York's. For the pedestrian, it's worse. Little Japanese motor scooters with little Vietnamese people on them are hard to see. There is a consensus among Americans here that crossing a Saigon street is much more dangerous than going into a battle zone. But the motor scooters present an even greater menace, air pollution. They put out great billows of acrid white smoke. We are told this is because most of the scooters have one-cylinder motors which require oil to be mixed with the gasoline. Now, during the evening rush hour, it's not only difficult to breathe, it's hard to see. When atmospheric conditions are right, the scooter exhaust fumes settle on Saigon in a dense fog, making it almost impossible to see from the National Assembly building to the Catholic Cathedral two blocks away. Some Vietnamese are rather proud of Saigon's polluted air. They feel Saigon is right in step with American cities, where, thanks to exhaust fumes, it's becoming increasingly difficult to breathe and see and hear. George Page, NBC News, Saigon.
And when you think of it, a fellow who skips a tune-up on his car doesn't help much. He may be reducing his own expenses, but he's costing his community a great deal. Our next report will be on the pollution problem in London. How to Make Girl Talk a Palatable Subject in One Easy Song by Jack Jones.
They like to chat about the dresses they will wear tonight. They chew the fat about their dresses and the neighbors fight. Inconsequential things that men don't really care to know become essential things that women find so apropos. But that's a game, they're all the same, it's just a game. They call it girl talk, girl talk. They all meow about the ups and downs of all their friends. The who, the how, the why, they dish the dirt, it never ends. The weaker sex, the speaker sex, we mortal males behold. But though we joke, we wouldn't trade you for a ton of gold. So baby, stay and gab away, but hear me say that after girl talk, talk to me. Hear me say that after girl talk to me. So baby stay and gab away, but hear me say that after girl talk.
Is nothing like a lark. It's America's most popular new cigarette.
Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today. Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today. Have a lark today. There's nothing like a lark.
Lark has an inner chamber of charcoal granules for a taste people really like.
Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today. Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today. Have a lark today.
There is nothing like a lark. Have one.
Monitor Sports with Joe Garagiola.
In every sport, just as in every business, one particular gripe seems to lead all the rest. It changes from sport to sport, but there's one gripe that ranks right up near the top with just about every athlete you might think of. Travel. As Mark Haynes. He bounces the ball up court until he reaches his man, and then the fun begins. He dribbles around the defender, Then he'll stand perfectly still, but switch the ball from one hand to another so quickly that you can't follow it. Then he'll kneel down, dribbling all the time. Then he'll lie down, and he'll still be dribbling. All the time, his opponent is trying to take the ball away from him. Finally, when his man is about ready to pull his hair out, Haynes will get up, dribble around his man again, and move into the basket for a layup. If you haven't seen it, you won't believe it. Also, if you haven't seen it, it's tough to imagine where you've been for the last 20 years. Haynes has played in over 5,000 basketball games, which should make him an expert on basketball. His credentials as an expert on traveling are even better. He's traveled over 1,300,000 miles, and his travels have taken him to 50 different countries. But those sound like the figures just about any traveling man would use. Haynes shows the way the touring athlete thinks when he adds two more statistics. 4,000 hotel rooms and 8,000 bus rides. Haynes says, I've traveled 10 months a year for the last 20 years. I've been married 19 of them, and I have two daughters. I miss my family, and I can't say I recommend the life because of being away so much. Except for that part, though, it's been a wonderful life. It's been a long road in basketball for Haynes. He started out as the mascot of the Sand Springs, Oklahoma high school team. He describes his job by saying, that meant I washed the uniforms. They have washing machines now and fancy titles like student manager. In those days, the mascot did all the work. For that, he got to go on all the trips. In 1946, Marcus Haynes graduated from Langston College in Oklahoma. Shortly after that, he began to bounce basketballs for money all over the world. He won't admit his age, but he figures to be in his early 40s. Recently, the New York Post's Maury Allen asked Haynes how old he was, and Marcus grinned and said, I'll be 21 on my next birthday. Watch him dribble a basketball, and you'll believe him. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports. Now this for Vigoro.
When the green in your grass is gone, and you gotta make it shape up, make it wake up with the bold green vigor of Vigoro. The bold green vigor of Vigoro.
You bet. And the answer is simple. Every Vigoro product is tailor-made for the area where it's sold. That's the secret behind the bold green vigor of Vigoro. Vigoro for goof-proof lawn foods. You sure ought to try them.
Joe Garagiola will be back later in the afternoon. He's a regular, you know, on Monitor. Monday through Friday, catch his sports show on NBC Radio. Lothar's Theme by Klaus Orgermann. 29 minutes past the hour, Monitor takes a break for NBC stations along the line, one of which is WBAP, Fort Worth, Texas.
Monitor, exploring the weekend world on the NBC radio network.
When a Hertz customer in Miami left his wallet at home, a Hertz girl lent him 50 cents to bail his car out of a parking lot. No, we're not in the habit of loaning money. We're in the habit of renting cars. But when you're number one in rent-a-cars and have a competitor who's trying very hard to take away all your customers, what's 50 cents? It's the underdog that's keeping the top dog on top. Rent a new Ford from Hertz.
Ooh, I still love her. Ooh, but I lost her. I mean, she walked out, the hurt walked in.
like an old song that no one ever wants to hear again. And I count heartaches that a big fool makes, and I think about my sweet misery. I do my sorrow each new tomorrow. Who they ain't never been a bigger fool than me.
Georgie girl. Sorry, wrong number. But you have the right number for Monitor, and we've got the Seekers on the line.
Hey there, Georgie girl, swinging down the street so fancy free. Nobody you meet could ever see the loneliness there
inside you.
Hey there, Georgie girl, why do all the boys just pass you by? Could it be you just don't try, or is it the clothes you wear?
You're always window shopping, but never stopping to buy.
So shed those dowdy feathers and fly
a little bit.
Hey there, Georgie girl, there's another Georgie deep inside. Bring out all the love you hide, and oh, what a change that be.
Georgie girl.
is a reality. You can't always run away. Don't be so scared of changing and rearranging yourself. It's time for jumping down from the shell. A little bit. Hey there, Georgie girl. There's another Georgie deep inside. Bring out all the love you hide. And oh, what a change that'd be. The world would see a new Georgie girl.
Hey there, Georgie.
I like the way it tastes.
I agree. There's nothing like a lark.
Lark has a good, easy taste.
Lark has an inner chamber of charcoal granules for a taste people really like.
I think they're the nicest cigarette there is.
Right. There's nothing like a lark.
There is nothing like a lark. It's America's most popular new cigarette.
Monitor's other expert on nothing with opinions on everything, Al Capp, who draws a verbal bead on anything that seems to him a public menace. Shootout.
Next time you run into the editor of your local paper, ask him this question. Would you, sir, let your newspaper be used by some smart operator who'd never gone to medical school to give specific advice to your readers on the treatment of serious medical problems, and to give that advice based on the patient's own self-diagnosis sent in by mail? The answer would be a thundering, indignant no. And yet, hundreds of our newspapers, and the chances are that your local paper may be one of them, are used by smart lady operators with no qualifications except a shrewd sense of money-making, used to give specific psychiatric, sexual, behavioristic advice to readers who are suffering often from serious emotional problems. Advice based on the often confused, hysterical, and possibly misleading self-diagnoses of these emotionally sick people. These are the Dear Aunt Fanny columns, which are now so very popular. The question is the practice of unqualified physical medicine any less dangerous than the practice of unqualified emotional medicine? No newspaper would permit a layman to practice physical brain surgery by mail in its columns, and yet they pay these smart lady operators to practice emotional brain surgery by mail, and they let them use their own readers as guinea pigs. Let me give you a really blood-freezing example from a recent excerpt from one of those Dear Aunt Fanny columns. A letter from a 15-year-old girl denounced her mother as a heartless, lazy shrew. Her father was described as a patient, overworked saint. She described in the most lurid detail her mother's bestial brutality to her father and her father's superhumanly sweet, silent suffering. She ended by saying she'd been taught that children of her age should be seen and not heard. And what, Dear Aunt Fanny, should she do? Well, Dear Aunt Fanny replied that she didn't go along with that old stuff about children being seen and not heard. She advised that 15-year-old to tell her mother off, and she quoted the line about out of the mouths of babes, to give the girl confidence that she had the right to tell her mother off. Well, I showed that column to a psychiatrist, an M.D., specializing in youthful problems, who is attached to the Harvard Medical School. He said, Dear Aunt Fanny's unquestioning acceptance of this child's story as the truth was a chance he would never take. He couldn't tell, he said, how much Dear Aunt Fanny had tampered with the child's letter to make it more exciting for her column readers, but if it were essentially as written, the girl just might be suffering from a common teenage psychiatric sexual disturbance, one which results in jealous hatred of the mother and blind adoration of the father. He said that based on such an incomplete and one-sided diagnosis, he would never dare encourage a clearly hysterical child to stand up and criticize her mother's intimate relations with her father. There was a rousing good chance, he said, that Dear Aunt Fanny, with no intent to hurt anyone but simply to make a buck out of other people's misery, had damaged the child by such advice and made family life unlivable for her parents.
Gee, I don't see what's so exciting about that, Al. Did you know that Freud wrote a book on President Wilson? Never met him? That, of course, was Al Cap, Dr. Cap. Monitor's expert on nothing with opinions on everything. And he's in the habit of cudgeling his brains during the week and letting them flow out here on the weekend. He's a regular on the show.
That others before you were foolish to cause me to cry. And just when I learned to adore you, you kissed one more dream goodbye and left me lonely again. Just like you found me again. No arms around me, just when I'm sure that my heart is secure and my teardrops are dry, with a warm glow inside and this love of mine till the end of the line. That's always the time. This time and this love would last. You told me I'd never be lonely, and now you belong to the past, and I'm so lonely again. Just like you found me lonely again. No arms around. That my heart is secure and my teardrops are dry, with a warm glow inside and this love of mine till the end of the line. That's always the time that I'm lonely again.
Eddie Arnold, bringing us to 15 minutes before the hour on the Monitor Beacon. Morgan here, and it's Monitor on Stage, a performance recorded live by Bill Cosby at Harrah's in Lake Tahoe.
I think the pride of my school days was when I was in shop, in junior high school. Shop, yes. I remember we had a nasty shop teacher. He was... that's what we called him, Mr. Nasty. He just didn't like kids at all. And one time I was reading a comic book. Not in his class. We had 2 minutes to go before the bell would ring. And he came up, yanked it away from me. You'll get this back at the end of the semester. Why, does it take you that long to read it?
But the proudest thing I remember was shop having an apron. You know what he put on you in shop? That gray apron? That meant so much to me because I used to excuse myself and pass by where the girls are cooking. And they thought I was something. I used to have 37 pencils in my apron, you know. I'd walk by with grease and oil on my hands that I'd borrowed from somebody's car, you know. I'd walk out on that guy's car and get some grease and oil on me, you know. I'd walk by, you know, and my girlfriend Doris used to come out and say, "Whoa, what are you making now?" "Oh, yeah, how you doing, Doris? What are we making? You mean this week?" "Well, this week we're just finishing up a Boeing 707. One of the great lies of our times. You know what else? I could never figure out who made the spigots. or the faucets in the schools. He must... The guy couldn't have had you washing your hands in mind when he made them. Because you can... It's impossible to wash your hand with holding the thing while the water comes out. You can't do it. And I've tried to wash... I spent 3 hours trying to wash my hands, trying to figure out how I could give it a good burst and put both hands on it at the same time. And then that soap they give you in a bowl, you got to have about 12 bowls full before you can get a bubble. Who does all that? Somebody weird, I bet you. You ever had a cold and try and survive the day blowing your nose on those paper towels they keep in there? Why, you can clean your whole lip right off. All the skin can be gone in one day.
Monitor on stage with Bill Cosby. Have a sweeping statement to make. This is a Monitor household tip. About carpet sweepers. Did you know the brush on the carpet sweepers is removable? Tis. And that brush needs to be washed once in a while. I'm sorry to tell you, but it's simple logic. There you've been all this time picking lint. You could have been washing it out of that little old brush.